is going on, ad-free shows fans? John Alba here, the host of One on One with John Alba, of course. And I really appreciate you guys and all the love you've given so far to the show. You know, here on ad-free shows, we like to try to throw some stuff at the wall, see if it works, see if it doesn't. We've got some great feedback so far of our pilot episode with Impact Wrestling's Josh Alexander. It was a great conversation that I had with him. He's one of my current favorite technical pro wrestlers in all of the world. So I said to myself, how can I follow up one of my favorites than doing better with my actual favorite? And if there's anything you know about me on social media, I'll be completely transparent. You know that I've been beating the Daniel Garcia drum all year long here in 2021. And I'm so excited because the official second guest on One on One with John Alba is none other than the hottest young name in pro wrestling right now, Mr. Daniel Garcia. My friend, how are you doing today? I really appreciate you joining me here.
Of course, man. I'm doing really good. I'm pretty exhausted from this past weekend, I'm not going to lie, but I'm ready to get back to it, and I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, Daniel and I, again, full transparency, have worked together on the independent scene, and I've had a firsthand look to see just how quickly his career has gone from, I don't want to say zero, because you were always just kind of moving along and getting yourself going, but you have just gone to an entirely different level that I feel like it's a rookie year. I say rookie because it's your first year really in front of these major promotions. It's a rookie year unlike just about anything we've ever seen in pro wrestling. What has the last calendar year felt like for you?
It's felt great, to put it simply. It's felt really good. Obviously, the year starting off, we were still pretty heavy in the pandemic and still doing shows at Limitless in front of no crowd. Not a single fan was allowed to be there. So to be from that at the beginning of the year to where I am now performing in front of thousands and thousands of people every single week is truly a blessing.
And for those of you who aren't super familiar with Daniel Garcia's journey, we're going to talk about it because that's what we like to hit on here on One on One with John Alba, that journey, the why of the journey, because I think that's the most captivating thing about any pro wrestler is finding out why they got to where they are. But it's especially interesting for you, Daniel, because as someone that has seen firsthand so many of your matches, and I've had the privilege of working with you and seeing how you put matches together, the why is the basis of everything that you do. And that's not something that is super easy to just figure out as a performer, I'd imagine. When in your journey did it kind of click for you that everything that I have to do has to have a purpose behind it?
To be honest, I really feel like things started clicking for me in a performance-based level. During the pandemic, right when we started the Limitless tapings back up, I was somebody who I kind of felt like I was overlooked once wrestling came back right after the pandemic. Obviously, WrestleMania weekend got canceled. Then they did that. The big return for indie wrestling was kind of that collective weekend in Indiana. I don't know if you remember that, but it was kind of like a WrestleMania weekend just in the fall. All the shows that were supposed to run just ran in the fall in Indiana. And I wasn't booked on any of the shows. This was just last fall. I felt super slighted. I felt like, this is going to sound dramatic, it made me feel sick that I wasn't booked on any of the shows. It made me feel physically sick when I found out. And a couple months later, once Limitless started running again, I knew I had to put my all into every performance that I had. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
The performance that I had during that run, I feel like every single time I was in the ring, I felt like I put all of myself into every single match that I had. And when you put your all into something, I think the best of you starts to come out and you really start to figure out, like you said, your why.
And to give some context to what Daniel's talking about, he's referring to Limitless Wrestling, which is a promotion based in New England and has certainly become one of the hottest promotions on the independent circuit. Again, for full transparency, I've worked with Limitless Wrestling extensively. And Daniel just wrapped up a run recently as their champion, which he held for pretty much most of the calendar year here in 2021. How did that championship run help elevate your game, not just on a platform, which we know it obviously helped put you on a huge platform, but in terms of making you a better professional wrestler that wasn't going to get slighted from opportunities like the collective?
When you're put in a position where you have to be the guy, it puts a lot of pressure on you. You have to close all these shows, and you have to most of the time have the longest match on the card, and you're expected to have the best match on the card as well. And that pressure can either make people fold, or it can either accelerate them and make them a better performer. And I feel like it was able to do that for me. That championship meant so much to me. And I feel like that run is really what kind of put me on the map in wrestling. I feel like being able to close all these big important shows during a time where everybody was watching a lot of wrestling, I feel like I was able to exceed the expectations that people were putting on me. And I feel like that's something that helped me a lot.
That's the thing that's so interesting for me, is that there was this trope for so long that indie wrestling, you're in the bingo halls, there's 30 people there, and we've all worked shows like that. For any of us who have worked independent wrestling, we have all done that. But independent wrestling has evolved so much where it's not uncommon to see hundreds of fans at a show, if not more than that. And with the advent of the likes of Fight TV and IWTV, now there are more eyes than ever. How did that help prepare you to make the transition to TV wrestling?
It helped a tremendous amount. I think a lot of people who, in the past, when they would go to TV, they don't know how to work cameras. They don't know how to tell a story with their body, to play to a bunch of different cameras in a wide audience. But I feel like the streaming services that we have, everything feels like TV. A million people might not be watching them on the ratings, but a couple hundred people are probably watching a good indie show live. And I feel like you really have to learn how to play to a camera, or to, what's the word I'm looking for? To perform at a TV level without actually being on TV.
Yeah, it's about getting reps in, right, at the end of the day. And it's similar. That's how I felt with a lot of my TV career. It's, you get the reps, and at first you're going to feel really uncomfortable, and you're not going to hit all those things right. But then once you find your mojo and you find your groove, and you have obviously found your groove at a pretty high level here, it becomes natural at that point. Do you feel like you are just locked in right now at a different level than you've ever been? Because it certainly comes across that way.
Yeah, I feel like in a strange way, the pandemic was a blessing in disguise. I graduated college right at the beginning of everything closing down. I just graduated. I got laid off from my job because of the pandemic. I worked at hotels at the time. I did market research for hotels, so nobody was going in and out of hotels, so I couldn't work. And it really gave me the opportunity to just lock in, and to dedicate all of my energy to wrestling. I was in the wrestling gym almost every single day, teaching the new students, and also teaching the students helps me learn and look at things in a new perspective. And I feel like just getting all those reps in on a daily basis with no other distraction in life is what really helped me to be able to lock in and improve as much as I did over the past year.
What's amazing to me is you talk about graduating college at the beginning of the pandemic. You talk about teaching people. You unveil your hand there. I mean, you're young. You're 23 years old. Your maturity carries way beyond that. And your ability to teach at 23, I think that speaks for itself. And people have to remember that, just how young you've been here. And you've only been a pro wrestler since you were 19, is that correct?
18.
So, okay, so we're talking 5 years here. I was first introduced to you when you were 19, which was so young in the game, obviously. What makes you step foot in the ring in the first place? What is that why for you? I'd love to know more about your life growing up in Buffalo, in that area. Is pro wrestling something that's just embedded in you from the beginning, or do you catch that a little later on in life?
Pro wrestling was something that I've always been a fan of. It's the one thing that I remember since birth. Like, my parents were wrestling fans. There isn't a time where, like, I got into wrestling, because I was always been a fan of it. My family was constantly playing it, and they were big fans of wrestling. And I would go to this independent show called Empire State Wrestling in my hometown. I went there a couple times, and I was very young, maybe 4 or 5 years old. And I went there a couple times, and then I just was a big WWE fan. I started to get into Japanese wrestling. TNA, Ring of Honor, all that kind of stuff. And once I got into those things, I started to go back to those independent shows with my mom. And I met a guy there named Mikey Every Night, who is a who owns the wrestling gym that I trained at. And he said, hey, do you want to be a wrestler? This is when I was 17. And I was like, yeah. So I go check. Of course I want to be a wrestler. And come to find out, Mikey went to the same high school that I did. He's much older than me, but he went to the same high school that I did. And he lived two streets down from me. And the wrestling gym was probably about 5 minutes away from my house. It still is. So it was a real easy drive. And I wanted to go check it out when I was 17 years old with my mom. And they said I couldn't train. I had to be 18, unfortunately. And I took a year after that. And to be honest, I don't want to say I fell out of love with wrestling, but I was kind of growing up and a lot of my attention was on hockey, which I was, I played at it all throughout high school and I was finishing up my hockey career. And when I turned 18, I was going for a jog around my house at Botanical Gardens, which I jog at. And I saw Mikey there walking home from the gym one night. It was raining. And I was like, hey, Mikey, I just wanted to say what's up to him. And he goes, hey, I don't think he really remembered me. He has really bad vision. He couldn't see me. And then he came up to me and said, do you still want to be a wrestler? And I was like, yeah, because he kind of put me in a tough position. What was I supposed to say? No. And then I started texting him and I showed up to the gym a couple weeks later. And then I started training.
So you loved wrestling growing up, but it wasn't necessarily something of like, I'm going to be a pro wrestler.
No, because like, how do you become a pro wrestler? I don't think that's something that really crosses your mind. It's like, you can be a big fan of it, but it's kind of like, man, if I want to be a wrestler, like there's really no way to figure out how that happens until you start going to small independent shows and until you start to get into the little nitty gritty areas of professional wrestling. And that's how you find out how you can get your foot in the door, I guess.
You mentioned that growing up, you were watching, obviously, WWE, but you were watching TNA, you were watching New Japan, you were watching Ring of Honor. That's not something you hear often from a lot of kids or teenagers, that they're watching that other stuff at that time. Like today's generation, I feel like we'll see a lot of that, but 10 years ago, that's just not the way that it was. How did keeping your palate expanded help shape you into the wrestler you are today?
Well, one of my trainers, Brandon Thurston, always tells me that one of the best ways to become a successful professional wrestler, in his opinion, is already coming in with a wide knowledge of different areas of professional wrestling. And I feel like if you only grow up watching one specific type of wrestling, I feel like you don't have a lot of variety in your performances. You don't know what will work best for you because you only know one certain way on how wrestling has been done. And I feel like because I was able to see a bunch of different ways that people can put together wrestling matches and perform as a professional wrestler, I feel like that was able to accelerate my process a lot and become.
Were you cognizant of that, though, while you were watching it growing up? Or is it just, I love pro wrestling, I'm going to watch as much stuff as I can?
Well, I just loved watching it because, like I said, it wasn't something that I ever, like I thought, of course, I thought to myself, man, it would be cool if I was a wrestler. But I didn't think it was ever something that I ever wanted to end up pursuing and have it be my career.
When you had those thoughts as a kid of, oh, yeah, I could become a pro wrestler one day, did that pro wrestler match the vision of who Daniel Garcia is right now?
100%. I was talking to somebody about this the other day. Like, I always knew I wanted to be a fundamental, simple professional wrestler. Whenever I would create my my guys on the video games, they would always have, like, submission finishers. I think one year, like, my finish was, like, an elbow drop or something like that. Not even, like, a cool Shawn Michaels elbow job, just a regular elbow job. So I always knew I wanted to be like a meat and potatoes, grind you down type of wrestlers. Whenever I envisioned myself wrestling, that's always what I thought I would be.
Why is that?
It's just what personally draws me to wrestling. I like seeing people struggle and I like seeing people show emotions of pain and fighting through adversity. And that's my favorite thing to see in professional wrestling. And I feel like you see a lot of technical wrestlers and a lot of meat and potato wrestlers on TV when you grow up, and they're all presented in a very specific way, and they're all kind of portrayed the same. And I wanted to portray that in a different way, in a more way that's personable to a wider audience, and something that's not so robotic, something that feels very real, who just happens to be a technical wrestler.
We're kind of in that era of pro wrestling right now where There are so many different styles, but what you just said, that grounded in reality element, seems to be a really hot thing that people are able to connect with. And now that you bring that up, I think of so many matches that you've had, the Wheeler Yuna match that you guys went to, an hour long draw on IWTV, just recently, your match with Alex Shelley, where you talked about that battle of going through and overcoming pain, physical pain. It seems so elementary in an essence, but in reality, I would imagine your thought process is that's how you can pull empathy from the people watching, is it not?
You see, I feel like we go through different eras of wrestling, in independent wrestling anyways. We were in an era of, for a while, it was like work rate, and that was coming off right off the Ring of Honor era, going into PWG. It was just having basically the craziest match that you could ever imagine, and that's what would get you over. And then we kind of transitioned into an era of gifts, where if the match is whatever, that's all right. As long as you get a good clip out of it and that starts trending on Twitter, you'll get booked and that'll get you over. Then we got into an era of micro content, where I like to call it, where it was all about like the Danhausens and Warhorse and people who are putting out these short little videos.
Niche stuff.
Niche stuff, who are getting over a very strong character to a very... to a niche audience. And I feel like now we're entering an era of violence, where people just want to see somebody get hurt. Death matches are super popular right now, and I hate saying it, but like shoot style pro wrestling is really popular right now. People just want to see somebody get messed up at any cost. I feel like those are the couple different eras of independent wrestling over the past couple of years.
I don't think the term shoot style is a negative term in any sense of the reality, because anything that is based in reality is shoot, regardless of whether it's in a pro wrestling context or not. And it's something that translates very obviously through your game. Have you found it difficult in any way to translate that onto a much larger audience here with AEW, or has the environment encouraged you in any way?
The environment is encouraging. I mean, we have people who really excel at that style. We have people like John Moxley, Eddie Kingston, people who, I don't want to say are like founders of that style, but people who had a really good hand in popularizing the style over the past couple of years, over the past decade or so. And I feel like I can learn a lot from these people. And I feel like I really enjoy sharing a locker room with people who share the same mindset in professional wrestling as I do.
You said that you obviously enjoy that shoot style and the idea of pain and struggle. Why is it that you identify so much with that? Does that relate to your personal life in any way, or things that you have overcome?
It's just, I think it's the most relatable thing ever. I think when an audience sees somebody doing and this isn't a knock on any type of professional wrestling, but if I'm a viewer and I know nothing about wrestling, and I see somebody do a shooting star press onto somebody, I don't know what that feels like. I can't relate to that at all. I can't relate to going to the top rope and doing a big flip and landing on somebody. I've never felt that in my life. But if I see somebody in the ring punch somebody in the face, smack them, get really disrespectful, boot them in the face, in just a condescending way that you're treating somebody like they're nobody, I know what that feels like. I know what it feels like to be treated like a nobody. I know what it feels like to be disrespected. And I know what it feels like to be mad about that and how to fight through that adversity. So I just think that's the most direct way to connect with an audience, is to give them something that they can relate to.
You just said that you know what it feels like to be treated like a nobody, and you kind of carry yourself with that blue collar mentality, of just, you seem like an everyday guy who has had some very severe life experiences. How did that make you carry that proverbial chip on your shoulder as you've made this venture into pro wrestling?
And like, I think just growing up in Buffalo has a lot to do with it. Buffalo is it's a cold, tough city. It's dark, it's gloomy. None of our sports teams ever win. They never win, never. We never had a major sports team win a championship. Nobody really like famous is from Buffalo. It's a city that you don't hear about a lot. over the past couple of years, I feel like we've been able to find our groove and success, though. It's really cool. People like Griselda, West Side Gunn, Benny the Butcher, they're like pretty famous rappers from Buffalo. And now we have some people from Buffalo who are actually succeeding in professional wrestling, like me, the Butcher, the Blade. The Bunny is from Toronto, but she lives in Buffalo, so we claim her. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just a cold, gloomy city that not a lot of people make it out of. And I feel like that is something that definitely makes you carry a bit of a chip on your shoulder at all times.
Why are you so prideful of that then, that you are one of those guys? And what would it mean to you to be identified as the Buffalo boy, like at the end of your career 20 years from now?
Buffalo is, I think it's the best city, man. It's like there's nature, but it's also like a urban city. I grew up in like inner city of Buffalo. Like the people I just named, no offense to them, they're not from Buffalo. They're from suburbs of Buffalo.
You're straight out of Buffalo.
Yeah, I'm from South Buffalo. I went to Buffalo public schools my whole life. I went to school downtown. It just means a lot to me. I see a lot of the struggles and a lot of the successes from Buffalo. And I feel like I'm somebody who would like to represent that over the next couple of years.
Is the anchor.
Show kids that they can, even though they're from a city that not a lot of people make it out from, they can still make it out if they work hard enough and if they keep good head on their shoulders.
No, I love that mentality 100% of the way. I was going to shift on you there and put you on the spot. Is the Anchor Bar, the legendary Anchor Bar, the place for wings there, or is there anywhere else that you...
Anchor Bar is all right. I mean, it's like the tourist spot, kind of. The best spot in Buffalo for wings is Gabriel's Gate on Allen Street.
That's Gabriel's Gate. What about what do you like in a good Buffalo wing? Like what classifies a good wing?
Man, a good wing is something that you don't need. Like if you could eat it with no sauce, it's still good.
Okay,
that's the best wing. It doesn't need no sauce, but like something with some good meat on it. A good deal doesn't hurt, you know, if you can go somewhere with like 25-cent wing day or something like that. That's always a plus.
How spicy are we talking here?
I'm a barbecue guy. I always like to get barbecue. But if you go to this is another really good place. It's like it's called Barbill. It's not in Buffalo. It's about a half hour away in Ellicottville, which is like Western New York kind of Buffalo, I guess. They got like the crazy flavors. And if you ever want like a really like interesting flavor of wings, you got to go there. It's really good.
I just, you know, if you're wearing that battle flag of Buffalo, I feel like the only way to prove you're battle tested is to just rattle off all the wings places that have gone through.
Oh yeah.
So much respect to you for that. But the thing that I identify you most with Buffalo is that Buffalo crew, some of the people you just mentioned, but famously just a few years ago, you and a few close friends, Kevin Blackwood, Puff, were involved in a life-altering car wreck that very much could have killed all of you. Instead, you have made it out of it on the other side, and all three of you have found different varying levels of success, obviously yourself where you are right now with AEW. How did that incident change your outlook on life and fuel you to become who you are today?
I think during that time, I don't want to say I was falling out of love wrestling, but it was something that I was getting a little sick of. I felt like every booking I was on, I was kind of going through the motions a little bit, and I wasn't really giving it my all. I was just run down. I was in college at the time, so I felt like 20? I wasn't dead. 20 or 21.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like I wasn't able to dedicate my full self to wrestling, and I feel like that was kind of making me I was still putting on good matches and stuff. I was still doing well for myself, but I just wasn't feeling feeling as much love for it as I did when I first started. And, you know, we got in that accident and I had to take 6 months off. And during that 6 months, I debated quitting a lot. I didn't know if I wanted to keep being a wrestler, but I came out of it and I love wrestling now, you know. It helps me be able to treat every match like it's special, because it really did help me realize that, man, like being able to be a wrestler in itself is a privilege, but to be a super high level wrestler who is potentially able to make it his living one day and maybe be the best at something, that's such a rare thing. It is a tremendously rare thing to ever be the best at something, and that was always my goal with wrestling. And I knew until I reached that, I knew I couldn't quit. I had to keep going.
Where does that drive come from for you?
I think I'm just a competitive guy when it comes to stuff I'm good at. Like, I'm overall not a competitive person. Like, when it comes to just like, say, like, a lot of people are just like randomly competitive when it comes to anything, like board games or video games. I'm not competitive with something unless I'm really good at it. And I knew that I was really good at wrestling. At the time, I wasn't even close to being the best in the world or anything like that, obviously. But I knew that I had the potential to be that one day. And if I were to give up, I feel like that would kind of just mean being like throwing away all my potential. That's something I never want to do. I hate seeing people waste their potential in any facet of life. I think if you want to do something and if you're good at it, you got to chase it full force. And I think you got to keep going and keep plugging along until you are able to reach your full potential.
And it runs a pretty ironic parallel to Red Death, your moniker, as well in the process.
I think that moniker represents my competitiveness, and it's kind of like a mode that switches on where all I want to do is just compete at the highest level that I could imagine.
Well, you've been finding yourself competing after that accident, and it was vicious, and we'll include some pictures in this as you watch this. You were able to bounce back, if I'm not mistaken, after the accident. You were like back in the gym a day later, more or less, weren't you?
I wasn't in the gym because I was in the hospital for a couple weeks. I remember I broke my legs, and then I think the next day or the day after, I was like riding the bike for
Yeah.
PT.
I mean, that's unbelievable. And that I imagine that that just comes from that competitor mentality that you carry. What kind of tests did you face mentally when you were in that rehab process and trying to plot forward, can I be a professional wrestler?
It just stunk. Like, I felt like at the time I was really making a lot of progress in my wrestling career. I felt like I was on the verge of breaking out, whatever that means. But the part that made me the most mad is I was finally in a spot where I was really happy with my body. I felt like I was putting on a lot of muscle mass, good muscle mass, and I was starting to really like the way that I looked. And then the accident happened, and obviously I couldn't work out for months, and all my bookings went away because I couldn't wrestle. So it was just a tough mental thing to deal with. I remember just so many days being mad in my room, being mad my living room, just having to sit there and kind of be alone with your thoughts for a little bit. It was rough. But luckily, I'm way beyond blessed with the support system that I have around me with my family and my friends. And they were able to just help me get through it and help me stay positive throughout the entire process.
I was just about to ask that. What kind of support have you received from your family and friends? You mentioned that your family were all pro wrestling fans. Did they keep you on that path, encouraging you to pursue it, or was there a sense of, hey, maybe we should reel it back a little bit here?
Like whenever I say like I want to quit wrestling, because it's something I've thought of a few times, obviously during the break from the accident, and also during the pandemic is another time where I debated it. Whenever I say like, yeah, I'm thinking about quitting, my family is just like, why? Like, why would you ever quit? But they do agree if like something isn't making you happy that you should quit. But the reaction that I get from them is usually like, why? Why would you quit at something that you seem to be so good at.
Well, you certainly are, and it's gotten you on the attention of several companies throughout the globe. This year alone, you've made appearances for NXT, obviously, AEW, as we know that you find yourself with, New Japan Strong as well. I'd like to know from you, as you have developed your style a little more on a more prominent stage, do you find yourself pulling influences from different places that maybe you didn't before? Or has this just been who you are from the start? Because I feel watching you that I have even seen you start to incorporate new elements to your game as you have matches with so many different types of opponents with so many different types of styles as well.
Now, I pull inspiration from everything and everybody. Like, everything I see is inspiration, not just wrestling stuff. Any TV show or movie or album that I listen to, I get inspiration from it. From a wrestling standpoint, everybody inspires me, man. I feel like I have a match with anybody and I end up learning something new throughout that match. And I feel like I'm able to take the knowledge that I got from that match and incorporate it into my next one and then into my next one. And all of a sudden, you're just snowballing this amount of knowledge that you gain over this mosaic of people that you wrestled until you're like, I don't think it will ever end. I think the more I wrestle, until I wrestle everybody on earth, I feel like I'll keep learning and keep adapting my style.
What's been the most valuable lesson that you've learned during this run over the course of the past year?
So indie wrestling, you know this, independent wrestling was in a weird position for a little bit where we didn't have a lot of leaders and we didn't have a lot of people to learn from because everybody would just get signed whenever they would get to a level where they could help somebody. In generations prior, people would have veterans and people that they could look up to and learn from when they wrestle. Like, I never got the opportunity to wrestle somebody like a Johnny Gargano or a Tommaso Ciampa or a Chris Hero, because once somebody gets to the level of where they can start helping people, they get taken up. And that's not a bad thing. Like, I'm very happy people are getting their money and touching checks or whatever. But it just kind of left a generation of indie wrestlers to fend for themselves. And I feel like me, Christian Casanova, Lee Moriarty, Wheeler Yuta, this generation of us, I feel like in a lot of ways we had to teach ourselves. And I feel like that helped us in a lot of ways. But now that we have veterans coming back, people like Davey Richards, Alex Shelley, and we're getting opportunities to wrestle people with a lot more experience than us, people who've wrestled all over the world for 20 plus years, like almost as long as I've been alive, I feel like those are the best learning experiences that I've been able to have so far.
That's really fascinating to hear that. And I know that from my conversations prior with you that you do have a deep appreciation for savoring the moment that you're in and trying to take it all in, because we had conversations in the past about your future and where you might end up. And there were probably opportunities to sign with companies full time for you at other points previously, but instead you chose to test yourself a little more on the independent circuit and see what would come of that. What was your mentality behind that?
Hey, you always got to bet on yourself. You always have to bet on yourself. I knew, like, I never wanted to be the guy to sign somewhere just to say I got the contract. That I don't want to go somewhere and be a body, and I don't want to go somewhere that doesn't have a plan for me. And obviously, I had opportunities a bunch of places, and the timing just didn't feel right. I can't explain it. I don't know why, but I feel like my mom has given me very good intuition in life, and the timing just didn't feel right for a lot of those places.
What did she say to you about that?
I think she just blessed me. Like, she just helped me grow up and helped me to take my time and not rush into things, and just not to rush anything, not to rush the process, basically. And the past year or so, a bunch of opportunities arose, but I knew I didn't want to go anywhere just to say I got a contract. I wanted to go somewhere and instantly be a top player. And I wanted to be a major player in whatever company I decided to go to. And also, like, in a non-selfish way, like, I don't want to sound braggadocious, but I knew I didn't want to go somewhere until, one, the indies were in a better position than when I found them, and two, until I felt like I was undoubtedly the best wrestler on the independent circuit. And I feel like for a while, the independents were looking a little bit bleak. Not a lot of talent was there, but over the past couple months, a bunch of very talented people have came through and made names for themselves, like Brian Keith, Mysterious Q, Yo-Yo, Jhené Chi. And I feel like we can leave indie wrestling alone now. Like, I don't think they need me. I felt like for a while, selfishly, I was like, man, they need me here to help teach people. They need me here to be a draw, to help better the product. But I feel like they don't need me. And I feel like I definitely accomplished my goal of being widely regarded as the best wrestler on the independent. So I was happy to step away for the time being.
It's interesting that you mentioned the idea of wanting to leave it in a better place than where you found it. It's something that we're going to talk about next week with Danny Limelight here on One-on-One with John Alba, where that same concept, it seems like this generation of pro wrestlers, whereas maybe in the past that wasn't always the thought process, now a lot of indie wrestlers and people who get signed have that idea of, it is very important to me that this company or the general scene is better off than when I got here. Why is that so important to you?
I just think a business that gives so much to you, I feel like you have to leave it better for the next generation. If I'm able to pay my bills and I'm able to get money and make a living off of a business, I would like to be able to set that up for the next generation of people, because I felt very blessed to have a lot of veterans and a lot of peers who were able to motivate me and help me throughout my career so far. And I feel like I want to be able to be that for the next generation of people.
So let's talk AEW then. You get your chance to appear on some Dark tapings during the pandemic. It's kind of during an era where Dark is figuring out what it is as a show, and there's a lot of enhancement matches, and you're getting grouped in trios matches, and they're quick matches. When do you feel like you started to show something to the powers that be during your initial run on AEW Dark?
So AEW was actually my first match back after the pandemic. I had however many months off from January until, I believe, September, however many months that is, if you can do the math in your head. But my first match back was me and Kevin Blackwood against The Butcher and Blade. And I think that same week I did me and Kevin Blackwood against Joe Janela and Sonny Kiss. They were fun little matches, you know, nothing to write home about. They were fun. And then the next couple months, I was just grinding it out on the indies. And then I came back, I believe, in May to do Dark matches again for tapings. And I wrestled Joey Janela again. And I wrestled Lee Johnson. And the matches were a little bit more competitive. I felt like I was able to show a little bit more of who Daniel Garcia actually is. And I don't even know if I was able to prove myself during those. I think a lot of what people have seen from me was based on independent work. So I'm not sure if there was a specific moment where somebody saw me and was like, oh, we need Daniel Garcia from this AEW Dark match. I'm not sure if there was ever a moment from that. But if I had to guess, maybe my match with Lee Johnson was probably my best AEW Dark match up to that point.
So when was the moment that someone came to you and said, hey, I think we're going to start using you in a little more of a prominent role here? Who had that conversation with you, and what were you thinking as they start saying that to you?
I was on vacation, and it was like my first week off from wrestling in a couple months. It was in July. And then I took that week off because I knew the next week I had a busy week. I had the SCI tournament in Tennessee. And then that same weekend, I had the hour-long match with Yuta. And I was like, oh, man, this is going to be a long week. I'm going to be so exhausted, blah, blah, blah. And then they're like, hey, you want to come to Jacksonville this week? I'm like, sure, I might as well add on to this this crazy week that I feel like people are going to be talking about for a long time. And I get there, and me and 2.0 have the match with Darby, Mox, and King. And the rest is, as they say, is history.
What's it been like working with 2.0? You and I were speaking a few weeks ago about it, and you said that they've been super cool guys with you. How have those interactions shaped how you're being presented right now as a unit?
But 2.0 is great. They're veterans who have a lot of experience at every different level of professional wrestling. Not a lot of people know that about them. They wrestled in Chikara, they did a tour of Japan, and obviously they're working WWE. So they've kind of saw every aspect of what professional wrestling is. And I'm somebody who has only seen that from the outside looking in. I really haven't. I've wrestled for a lot of places, obviously, but primarily just in the United States and Canada, which is kind of the same market. And they're able to kind of teach me a lot about what the TV audience wants to see. And they're great helpers, and they're people who I feel like are on paper, maybe our characters or personalities wouldn't mesh together, our dynamic wouldn't work. But I think once you see it, I feel like you get it, and I feel like we're magic together.
But I think that's the funny thing, because I look at you, you're such a straight-faced man, like it's business. I'm going to go in there, I'm going to shoot, and it's going to be just a great professional wrestling match. And they are great characters, and they're very good wrestlers too, but they are great characters. And it makes me think about guys like Brian Danielson, who I'm sure you know, you get compared to early Brian Danielson all the time. And his early work, it's much more mat-based. And he had fun doing his stuff, but there's not as much personality. And then when he became Daniel Bryan, all of a sudden we're starting to see more personality from him. So have you felt any of that influence from the two of them and maybe helping round you out a little more as a pro wrestler?
Definitely. I feel like we're people who can pull out of each other. You know, I can pull the serious side out of them a little bit more. They can kind of pull more of a goofy side out of me. You know, I have that. Like, I really feel like I can be a Swiss Army knife of a performer. I really feel like I can be that. Not a lot of people see that. I see a lot of people on Twitter saying things like, oh, Daniel Garcia has no personality. Daniel Garcia has no charisma. Daniel Garcia can't talk. And I'm like, first of all, what I've showed so far at AEW, that is not true. If you think that's true, you're watching at a very surface level. But I feel like if you think that now, once I get the ball rolling a little bit more, give me a few months, and there's not a person on planet Earth that will be saying that about me.
I mean, I know you've got personality. I managed against you back in April, and the closing shot of the match is you holding me in a sharpshooter, hoisting this above your head, and with a stoic face. And the visual juxtaposition of it was just absolutely outstanding. And I thought it said a lot to you.
I think a lot of people think that in wrestling, personality is just like,
right.
You're like, being loud. It's like, that's a personality, but that's not what every personality is. Like, being stoic and being calm and calculated, that's a personality too.
100%.
And if that's presented in a good way, that's just as good as any other loud personality in wrestling.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of people just think that personality has to be one thing, and in my opinion and a lot of other people's opinion, it never has to be one thing. Wrestling would be so boring if all personalities were the same thing.
So where do things stand with AEW right now? We haven't gotten, as we tape this, we haven't gotten the official Daniel Garcia is all elite graphic yet, but you're obviously in a pretty prominent position here. How do you feel about your standing with the company?
I feel really good, man. It's a place, like I told you this before, I didn't want to go somewhere to just be a body. When I did decide to go somewhere, I wanted to go to a place that I believe was going to help groom me and help me become the best professional wrestler in the world. And I feel like that's the place that I'm at right now.
And you've had a chance to work with people that there's just no possible way that you could have ever envisioned yourself where it doesn't exist in reality, because in a timeline of 2.5 years ago, an opportunity to wrestle CM Punk doesn't exist. An opportunity to wrestle Bryan Danielson out of a WWE ring doesn't exist. So yeah. Getting a chance to have matches with a CM Punk, first off, not just having a match with him, but hearing him, and I read the Sports Illustrated article the other day, talk about you and him saying that you are everything that he would want in a pro wrestler. What does that feel like?
It's a good feeling, man. I think as wrestlers, we obviously crave some sort of validation from people. Let it be from an audience, but I feel like as wrestlers, we appreciate validation even more from our peers, and we appreciate validation from people who we look up to. So somebody like CM Punk, who I grew up watching and who is like my mom's favorite wrestler ever, it's really cool to hear that kind of stuff from, and it's always a validating experience, and it kind of helped. Like, sometimes you get down on yourself when a lot of people will talk bad about you on forums and stuff like that. But once you hear yourself getting credit from somebody who has made millions and millions of dollars off being a wrestler and is widely regarded as one of the greatest of all time, it makes you stop and think, maybe I'm doing the right thing.
How'd you feel about the match?
I enjoyed it. Wish I could have won, you know. But I feel like that's how I like to present my professional wrestling. I feel like we told a very interesting story about struggle and about overcoming odds. And I think we shocked a lot of people too, man. I don't think a lot of the people expected it to be as competitive as it was. I don't think a lot of people thought that I was able to perform at that kind of level. And I feel like we were able to prove a lot of people wrong.
He say anything to you afterwards that gave you that validation that everything has been working so far?
nothing more than he said in that Sports Illustrated article. I think he said enough in that Sports Illustrated article to hold me over for a long time. I know some people are calling it Punk's best match since his return. You know, some people are calling it that. Not me, but some people are calling
it. By that, you mean 2.0 has been texting you, hey, that was Punk's best match.
Some people are saying that. I see a lot of people saying
100%.
That.
Man. No, and it was a great match. And you brought out a different side of Punk that Darby didn't and Hobbs didn't. And that's nothing against their matches. Their matches were all excellent, but it's different dynamics, right? Like you said, like, every pro wrestling match has a different vibe to it, and you brought out a different side to him, which was really cool to watch. I have to imagine, and I apologize for assuming here, but Bryan Danielson is probably the guy that is sitting on that pedestal for you to have a match with. Am I wrong by suggesting that?
The Bryan match would be cool.
Is there someone that supersedes who you'd want to work with in AEW over Bryan Danielson right now? What kind of influence did he have on you growing up? Because there are so many parallels being drawn.
Yeah, I mean, he's maybe my favorite wrestler of all time, at least top three. He's somebody who I've studied for years, even before I knew that I was studying wrestling, just by watching him. I would pick up on little nuances that he does, and I feel like our wrestling styles aren't as similar as some people like to say they are, but I feel like the little things that we do are a lot more similar than people like to notice.
Is there anyone that you compare your style most to?
Style what? Like, I don't know, a lot of people say I'm he's a technical wrestler. Like, people, I get, like, a lot of, like, the Zack Sabre Jr. comparisons and the Bryan comparisons, obviously. But I feel like from a just purely stylistic standpoint, just, like, moves and stuff like that, I feel like I wrestle, like a throwback, like an Arn or a Toldy. I feel like, stylistically, that's probably who I wrestle the most like.
Well, Arn Anderson is
just moves wise. I feel like Those are probably the most similar to what my style would be, and Suzuki, but just because I steal all of his moves.
Arn Anderson is someone all of our ad-free shows, customers and subscribers are certainly familiar with, and that old school mentality I see you pull a lot. And Suzuki, you just had a chance to wrestle Minoru Suzuki. I'm sure that was right up there on the accomplishments for you. You did this tour just where you're wrestling all these legends and traveling all over the country. You said earlier you're exhausted, but how much are you enjoying this run that you're on right now?
It's great, man. It's hard to be... It can be hard to be present in those moments just when you're so busy and so just locked in on what you're doing. Obviously, I went from Wednesday, Philadelphia, to Thursday in Boston for Beyond, and then San Francisco the next day, and then back to Buffalo. So it can be hard to be – it can be hard to acknowledge the gravity of what you're doing in when you're living in the moment. But now that I've been able to take 2 days off, and just relax and look back on it, it's pretty cool. Getting the knuckle bump from Suzuki was honestly maybe like top 10 moment of my life. I probably watched the video about 1500 times on my phone. So
that's awesome. Where does putting John Albert cool. Sharpshooter rank with the top 10 moments of your life?
Top 7 for sure.
Okay, top 7. Gotcha. Okay. I appreciate that. Listen, man, it's just been such a pleasure seeing your career unfold. As I said, in the interest of full transparency, I've known Daniel for a little while now, but and I have vested interest in his journey because you always feel like you're part of someone's journey when you see it that closely. But you're doing things that not many people have ever done in pro wrestling. What is something that you would like everyone to take away from your journey that you think they can apply to their everyday life?
Like, I know it sounds corny, but I want people to see that they can, like, you can do what you want to do. If you try hard enough, and if you are smart enough and have enough acumen and have the drive and dedication to do it and the discipline, like, you really can accomplish what you want to do. You really can. We live in a time where if somebody wants to succeed in something artistically or musically or something like that, it can be done. It can be done. We like with social media and with marketing and with, and if you're good at something, you're going to succeed at it. And I feel like once you find your groove and once you find what you're good at and you find your passion, I think you should hunt it down relentlessly. And I feel like you should just keep going. If people who, like, I hate the word, but like haters, like try to say that you can't do something, like, man, screw them. They're not brave enough to follow their dreams. Following your dreams and putting yourself out there in a public way is very brave and it's very courageous. It can be very scary to do it. But once you get over that fear and once you start to reap the benefits of your, once you start to reap the benefits of your struggle, it's worth it. And all the scariness and all of the struggle you had to go through, the success makes it worth it. But also enjoy your journey. Like, don't rush a process. Don't be so focused on an end goal that you're not present in where you currently are. Because if you look at it from a wrestling standpoint, a lot of people first started, they just wanted to be wrestlers. They just wanted to be in a wrestling ring. And then you just keep moving the goalposts back, right? Because then you have your first match. Okay, I'm a wrestler now. Oh, man, now I want to wrestle for this promotion. And once you wrestle for that promotion that you've always dreamed of wrestling for, you're not even present in the moment to realize, man, this is what I've always wanted to do. I heard Adam Cole say this before. Be obsessed with where you are. Don't be obsessed with where you want to go. And I feel like that's really good advice. Because once you obsess over where you are and making where you are the best it can possibly be, that's what will take you to the next level to be able to be where you want to be long term. Once the things change inside of you, the things around you will change. That's my big rant for the day.
Kumbaya, man. Just 23 years old, and you're so wise beyond your years. And it's so apparent in your work that the amount of love and thought that you put into things translates to every single match that you have. And it really has been a privilege getting to watch you up close. I say that personally, but professionally, everyone who's watching your matches are learning and getting something new out of them, because you're bringing something different to the table right now, Daniel Garcia, that, again, like I said at the beginning of this interview, we haven't seen a run like this in a very long time from anyone. So it's been really a treat to watch. And I'm so excited to see where your career is going to take you, because I do think we're watching an all-time great career just start to sprout. So it's very, very exciting. And I congratulate you on all that success. I'm sure you get a ton of tweets every day about pro wrestling, but if you want to find Daniel Garcia on Twitter, just tweet him about basketball, throw him your basketball takes.
Yes.
I feel like that's the way. You got any preseason picks for me? Any,
Miami, bro.
Okay.
Miami's killing it right now. Yeah. If you tweet me about wrestling, you probably won't get a response, but if you tweet me about something that I like outside of wrestling, I'm probably going to respond to you and we'll have a little conversation.
Garcia Wrestling, that's where you find him. Daniel, congratulations again. Thank you so much for going one-on-one with me. Hopefully a little easier than going one-on-one with Jimmy Butler, but I really appreciate it, and it's just been a blast, man. So thank you again.
Thank you, John.